Today is Thursday. It is April 13th, 2017. It's 11:12 in the morning. The Chicago Blackhawks will play their first playoff game of the season. Woo-hoo-hoo! Tonight on WGN Radio, I am John Williams. Today is also, by the way, Steve Bertrand points out the 25th anniversary of the Great Downtown Flood.
And I would have pointed it out, Chicago. But John did. Yeah, it was a big day 25 years ago. I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and also the host of the Prickly City Podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Darlene Glanton. I'm a columnist at the Chicago Tribune.
And she's wondering why she's here.
Joining us on our little podcast.
She should have been smarter.
We are the Mincing Rascals. Portions of this will be broadcast on WGN Radio on my show Saturday morning at 11:10 a.m. I saw a perfect meme for the month of April last night. It said, "This is April." And it showed a picture of Sean Spicer with the United Airlines flight cap on, standing in the aisle of a plane holding up a Pepsi.
Right.
Because those were three of the flashpoint topics this half month, and they've been just cuckoo bananas. Let's just, because it's local and topical, talk about the United Airlines story. Who is more at fault for what happened to that man? Steve Bertrand?
Well,
the passenger, Dr. Dow.
Who is most at fault, I would say, are the law enforcement officers who dragged him off.
Fair enough. I mean, really, I don't think that gets brought up enough. It's all this man or the airline, but it was those people that the airline invited onto the plane to remove him.
Who've all been reassigned at this point or under investigation,
now,
too.
Right. Okay, but that wasn't what I asked.
It was.
I'm more interested, though, in who do you think is more responsible for his concussion and broken nose or tooth or whatever, the passenger or the airline?
Well, I he is.
Okay. How about you, Scott?
Oh, the airline. That was a preposterous policy.
But he could have avoided, I mean.
Thank you.
He could have what?
I just wanted to give John's answer. No, but he might have avoided it had he, the responsibility for his injury, it was not inevitable. I'm not saying the situation was his fault or that the United's not to blame. He might have avoided his injury.
The police come on the plane. You have to get off now. Conversation over. You'll still get an attorney. Fine. But get off the plane. Get off the plane. Darlene, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that he should have gotten off the plane. But clearly, I think United is solely responsible for all of this. I mean, I can't imagine being on a plane. It was almost like United was saying, you know, whatever you have to do is not that important. You know, we're so worried about our passengers who are stuck somewhere and, you know, this crew that needs to get somewhere. They're much more important than you are. And that would make me pretty angry, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I like your question really, John, because
you think it's not.
Because I think it focuses on the wrong. I mean, that's an isolated situation about a bigger problem, and the bigger problem is the policy. And you know,
I mean, overbooking,
and the way they're treating people in this particular policy.
I think there's even a bigger issue here, in that flying now is a nightmare. You have to go through TSA. That's number one. That takes forever, and you know, the cavity search disturbs, especially when they dim the lights and put on
the romantic music.
A
cavity search? Wow. Okay.
Well, they dim the lights and put on the romantic music, so that's kind of nice. But
yeah, that's your dating life. We're talking about United Airlines.
But then you get to the airline. You have to wait in line. You get there. The seats are roughly, you know, 3 inches narrower than you are. It's become very unpleasant to travel, and then so everyone's pissed off already. Now add this. You know, I want you. And NPR had a very interesting story this morning talking about the psychology of it. And once you're in the plane and in your seat, it's your seat. There's actually a human behavioral component to this. That
sure.
It's mine. Don't offer me what I probably came close to paying for this thing. They should have offered a lot more. They could have kept going up.
Were at $850, something like that.
$800, yeah. And so it was so badly handled at so many levels, and travel is so abysmal and unpleasant already. This is just, I think, it just shows why this story has legs.
I'm afraid to say this because it could make me sound unsympathetic maybe, but this doctor, Dr. Dow, his attorneys were speaking just
moments
a few minutes ago,
yeah,
and said that this ordeal for him was more traumatic than his escape from the fall of Saigon, which is, everyone's looking at me. I don't know. To me, that just seems odd.
Oh, that's an advocate.
Right.
That's an advocate. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, this is the guy that did get Demetrio you're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big-ticket guy. He's looking for... In fact, really, why was there this high-profile press conference, which CNN was streaming live? Really? Did they need to do a press conference?
When it rolls back, it actually, to my mind, it rolls back to, and I did a cartoon about this today that ran today, which is, you know, we're here in Chicago. The incident happened in O'Hare. A guy gets dragged off a plane. It's, you know, it's on video. That's too bad. But in the same week, we had a judge and two kids shot here in Chicago, and there's no, it's pretty much a yawn and a, well, what's on page two.
A judge's story is not getting the attention it deserves. That's shocking. It's horrible. And you're right.
Yeah, we just
now going back to the UAL story.
So in terms of like outrage, I mean, that's a three. The shootings in Chicago are in the hundreds.
I think though the difference may be that people can relate to the experience of flying and the frustrations you were articulating. I don't know what that was like or what was going on.
Well,
with that
it came up this week in the meeting between Sergey Lavrov and Rex Tillerson. And they both UAL reunited was at fault.
Well, at least we're all coming together.
Common ground.
Way. They've got that.
And that's the biggest struggle we have when we're covering the violence. People don't relate to it. And, you know, they don't see these kids as their own kids. And if we could cross that threshold, I think we'd have a lot more interest in trying to do something about this violence.
Yeah, this guy, the judge wasn't killed because he was a judge. He was killed because he lived there.
Yes.
Right? And that's why it's not resonating with a lot of people.
Well, as always, if any of these shootings were taking place in Hinsdale, you know, if they were taking place where I raised my kids in LaGrange Park, if a suburban school district was suffering a shot child a week, can you imagine how quickly would be fixed?
Do you remember, two, 3 years ago here in the Loop, downtown area, which is obviously on the Magnificent Mile here on Michigan Avenue, they were having kids coming up and causing shenanigans, as we might say, you know, violent attacks, holdups and so on. And oh my God, the response from the city was overwhelming. We had a bazillion cops around and they stopped it because you can shoot a kid down the south side. Apparently you can't hold up a tourist.
Go ahead, Dolly.
Look at what they did at Navy Pier. You know, there were a couple of ruckuses at Navy Pier last year, and they changed the rules where now if you're under 18, you have to be with a parent or guardian before you can even get into Navy Pier.
At all.
And they also reserve the right to ask for your ID if you're over the age of 18.
You know, they do that at the Mall of America now, too. I know a little bit about life in Minnesota. The Mall of America is like this great national thing. It's an international stop for people. And they've had wilding incidents there, too. And so now they have a curfew, and you've got to demonstrate your age if you want to be there. I don't have a problem with that.
That's always Cinnabon that suffers.
But the point is that those are two areas being protected because they're outside cash coming in and not because people who are victims of that are living there.
Mm-hmm. It says something about where our values are,
absolutely,
our priorities are.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll leave the United Airlines story for just a second. But, you know, I've taken some heat this week because I seem to be the only talk show host in America who said that story is in two parts. It was UAL and the cops doing everything wrong. But when the police get on the plane, then the passenger did everything wrong. And then, by the way, he got back on the plane, bloodied, walking up and down the aisle.
Listen to yourself. You can't escape the story.
Why?
You were just leaving the story. Okay. I mean, there's no escaping it. It's
everywhere. But I'm frustrated, Steve, that there's this sense of entitlement, that nobody knows how to behave in public. If the police ask you to do something, do it.
What if it's wrong?
Who's the arbiter of right and wrong in this case? I mean, really, I don't know if this guy was right or wrong. This guy was wrong. You do not own that seat. You have to get out of this seat now. Get out of the plane, as I said earlier.
All and right. Win later.
Well, yeah.
Although
yeah.
How did he get back on, by the way?
He won't win as much.
Isn't that weird?
He wouldn't win as much as he does now with the concussion.
Oh, I know. I'll tell you what, if he didn't lose a tooth on the plane, he went in the bathroom and hit himself in the face a couple times to loosen that bad boy up.
Okay, so moving on.
I'm sorry.
The biggest winner of the week, can I just posit, the biggest winner of the week is Sean Spicer.
Oh, gosh.
That's my next topic. Why?
Yeah, he's going to kiss that passenger on the lips.
The passenger, the Russian meetings, the all of the things that have happened, the NATO meeting, and why do they completely overshadowed what was a fireable offense. And on a typical week, I think he'd be gone by the end of tomorrow. And I think because so many other things have overshadowed it, that he's going to survive.
Oh, come on.
Oh, he wouldn't.
This is the Trump White House. Right.
You don't think he'll be gone?
No.
Why not, Jolene?
Well, first of all, I'm not even sure Trump cares. I mean, he's made similar snafus himself, so it would be rather hypocritical to fire Sean Spicer for saying something derogatory about the Holocaust. You know, here's the thing. Sean has the most difficult job of anybody. In a way, I want to feel sorry for him, but except that he chooses to have this job. I mean, he really should just walk
recuse
off and
himself.
Say, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, because
drop.
You cannot please Trump. I don't care what he does. He can't please him. And you cannot pretend that what he's saying makes sense and you can't go out there and defend it. So my point in
saying that he would be fired wasn't so much that what he said was so offensive that it was fireable, but I think how he defended himself then at that very moment just shows he's just not up to the job.
But
the president gets to fire the other people, and that's where John and I have talked this week. I do feel a little bad for him because he's over his head and he's not up to it. But and again, I said, following what you said, is that but he still goes to work.
But you're wondering out loud if what he said, even if he'd articulated it better,
should we
was
tell them
so
what he
offensive.
Said, just the listeners, during a press conference, he said even comparing Assad to Hitler, saying even Hitler didn't gas his own people, sort of forgetting the gas chambers.
Right.
And then in this part two, he sort of tried to explain that, well,
he didn't actually drop it from
a plane.
He didn't
drop them from the air.
and he didn't do it to his own people.
I don't know what his people is, because some of them were Germans, so I don't know what that means. They were Jews, but they... I don't even know what he's talking about.
Well, neither does he, so you're on the same page there.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But the thing is, he works for a man who, what was it, last night, Fox Business News Channel has an interview with President Trump, and Trump says he remembers the cake he was eating when he ordered the bombing of Iraq.
And then Maria Bartiromo corrects. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, you mean Syria?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he was talking about the wonderful cake that he was enjoying with...
The best cake. The best
with
cake.
With the Chinese...
president. Yeah.
President, and he says... So we had this beautiful cake, and while we're enjoying this great chocolate cake, we're bombing Iraq. And she goes, you mean Syria? Yeah, Syria, whatever. All I know is we were bombing somebody. And the bombs in the cake were huge. They were awesome. They were the best bombs in cake ever. Just a little mental,
he's not making this up.
Verbal
issue. Yeah, you know that.
Yeah.
Specifically chocolate cake, yeah.
Back to Sean Spicer for a second, though. Should he be fired, Darlene? I mean, you're suggesting no.
No. I mean, you know, nobody can rise to the occasion to be, a responsible press secretary for this administration. It's impossible. It's an impossible job.
Because the person who you and I would imagine would be good would be different than Donald Trump. Donald Trump would not keep under his employ the person who would be the responsible, sober, push back, be mm-hmm. more truthful. That's not what Donald Trump wants. That doesn't represent him. Mm-hmm. So the person you and I imagine doesn't get the job. It has to be somebody like Sean Spicer, maybe a better version of Sean Spicer, but it's got to be a yes man.
Does anyone know where Spicer came from? Do you know?
Yeah, he was
he's a Republican.
At the RNC.
Yeah.
Yes. He was a Priebus guy.
Does he have a journalism experience at all?
He has. Listen, the people in the press corps knew him when he was with the RNC and said he was a good guy. He could speak. He could chew gum. You notice that when he gets nervous now.
How could you lose that skill?
You're being funny, right. But I think when he is under the gun and when he knows he has to manage something that's either impossible or untrue, he starts to disintegrate. He said Assad, for instance. I think it's a little tell because he does that a lot. His vocabulary gets weird. He said
concentration centers. Holocaust centers.
Yes. Holocaust centers. Like, what the hell is that? This all happened in that one moment.
And that's why he should be fired.
But previously, he wasn't like that. Previously, he was glib and, you know, he was a Republican. That's good. You know, good for him. But he wasn't a disaster that he is.
He's
now
speaking for the country. He's supposed to be articulating what the White House believes to the world. And he's just proven, gaffes aside, and the fact to whom he has to report all of that to the side, he's proven that he's just not up to it. And that's why he should be fired.
And part of the problem also is he's clearly not in the loop. He's not in the president's you know, inner circle, because there have been times when he has held news conferences and have given completely inaccurate or, you know,
Well, starting with the size of the inauguration crowd.
Well, yeah.
The swearing-in ceremony. Remember, that was our introduction to him. He went out there and lied, or defended the lie. But that's mm-hmm. what he's been doing all along.
And right? He was forced to do that.
I think you're absolutely
right.
He was
forced to do that. And early on, it was said that the president actually critiqued him every time he went out there, and quite often, you know, didn't like that he wasn't lying well enough.
Answer me this. How important is it, or troubling is it, that the president seems to be changing his position on a number of issues now? Is China a currency manipulator? Is Russia a good guy or a bad guy, et cetera? We seem to see our foreign policy evolving right before our eyes. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I've read that it's not as bad as it sounds if we get it right.
If he sticks to it.
Yeah.
The policies he's articulating now are more mainstream American policies. So if you think that he's going to stay on this course, then I would think you'd be encouraged. But there's no reason to believe he will, right? I mean, words don't matter to him. NATO is, what was the word that he used? Is
obsolete.
Obsolete.
Or not obsolete.
Because now they're not. He didn't really believe it then. He probably didn't even understand what he was saying then. But it fit him then.
Well, it worked on the campaign trail. Yeah.
Right, and so now something else does. So does the word he used yesterday matter more than the word he used in June?
Well, I don't know, Steve, but all I know is now NATO is important and relevant. Check, right? Russia's the bad guy. Check. We're going to deal intelligently with China. Check. So
if that's what happens. So there was playing a clip I heard this morning on MSNBC of when he was on Morning Joe in the summer.
By the way, two of their staffers are dating. I don't know if you heard that.
Really?
Yeah,
the top two?
It's in my, I'm not sure who it was. I just saw a headline. I didn't click through.
Oh, thanks for that.
So to continue.
Okay, so anyway, so Trump was on back when he was talking about the Mexican, the illegal immigrant, you know, we're going to get rid of these people. And he did something very interesting. Mika Brzezinski said, are you talking about a deportation force? Is that what you're going to do? She put the word in his head, and he repeated them. He goes, yeah, deportation force. And that's kind of where it came from. It wasn't something, and I think that sort of speaks to the way he communicates. He regurgitates in many ways some things that he hears or is driven toward that I don't think the words matter. So I hope the policies he articulated this week are the ones he sticks with, but I don't have much confidence that they will be.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you're speaking and acting in ignorance. I mean, clearly, this is a president who had no clue about what this job entailed. And some of the things that he said on the campaign trail were, you know, made that very obvious. And I think that now that he's getting settled into the job, that he's beginning to listen to people other than Steve Bannon, who also doesn't know anything about how government runs. And one of the most telling things I thought was when he talked about, the president talked about having a conversation with the president of China over the phone recently. And within 10 minutes, he realized that China didn't really have that kind of control over North Korea as he thought they did. But he had no clue.
Right.
He had no clue about the history, you know, between
taking the call to Taiwan, the Taiwan president.
Yes, right. But no history about the relationship between China and North Korea. And all the things he said during the campaign, you know, China could stop this. China can do this.
We'll
China
do it alone if they don't do it.
Yes. So
healthcare is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one of my producers said to me that when he spoke to the nation about the launch of the 59 Tomahawk missiles onto the Syrian airfield, he looked nervous. He looked scared. It was the first time where, Darlene, you thought he realizes the consequences of his actions, or the gravity anyway, that holy crap, I'm really starting something. It's not just me ginning up a rally here. Mm-hmm. Now people are dying in Syria as a result of my actions, and the world is going to change, and oh crap, now what? Yeah. Now what? You know, he just looked a little lost.
What have I
gotten
myself into?
Yeah, yeah. Or what have I gotten us into?
Thank God he has golf to fall back on.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that, do we, Scott?
God,
it's amazing. Pick your
outrage,
hypocrisy. But he sure did beat up. You know, it's like your pick your where do you want to put your brain for the day? And I'm trying not to be distracted by his when travel costs or his golf time.
You know, you're trying to not to be distracted by when he complained that the Obama family flew in two jets to their Martha's Vineyard vacation because it was a waste of money?
Yeah, right. I mean, really, because I think that is a wasted use of your brain.
He's on track now to spend in a year what the Obamas spent in eight in travel.
Right, and I don't think that's a useful use of your time.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's a good
consideration. He's talking about your time, Scott. He said you should forget about it because it's going to drive you crazy.
Well, I'm trying to not be distracted by all of the distractions that he offers up.
On the list of what's important.
Right. I mean, all right, so let's just wrap this podcast up with, for the edification of our listeners, Darlene, we talked about the UAL story. We talked about Sean Spicer. We touched on the continuing plague of crime in Chicago and the president flip-flopping on issues. Prioritize these for me. Where should I put my mental energy?
If you live in Chicago, I think it definitely should be the crime and violence in Chicago. And secondly, it has to be the president's coming to terms with what foreign policy is all about and what, you know, has to be done in this country.
No, can't argue with that.
I can't argue with that at all. I think even if you don't live in Chicago, you have to look at the systemic problems of Chicago and what's causing the crime and the shootings and how to stave them. They're clearly having an effect. We've lost 250,000 people from the South Side alone. Kids who, and mothers and fathers who don't want their kids to be, you know, shot.
Beautiful babies, if I may quote.
Oh, don't. See, now you're doing that again to me. That's a distraction I don't need to get off on. But, oh, my God, Trump will not let anything be big enough, bad enough, or good enough. They didn't just kill civilians. They didn't just kill young civilians. They killed babies. No. That's not good enough. What kind of babies did they kill?
Beautiful.
They killed beautiful babies. That's even worse than killing ugly babies. Stop it. Back to you already in progress.
And that just dovetails into the second concern, which is our ADD president, which is, you know, he needs to take his Ritalin or something because he just can't seem to keep the same perspective 2 days in a row.
Last thought from you, Steve Bertrand.
I don't know. I might disagree a little bit. I think bigger picture, what's going on in Russia and with Syria and all of that is probably the biggest impact for me this week.
Fair enough. Darlene, I don't know if you know this.
Of it, but
anything else you want to say about
that? No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Well, so we always close the podcast with a recommendation, something we are reading, watching, listening to, or thanks to Kristen McQuarrie, drinking, that you want to recommend for our listeners. I'm going to go first. Playoff hockey. Even if you are not a hockey fan, playoff hockey is better than playoff football. It's better than NBA playoff basketball, which takes forever to get really rolling. I mean, the Bulls are in it, for crying out loud. But playoff hockey has a certain energy on TV that is, I think, the best of the playoff sports.
I'm going to say,
and the Blackhawks obviously are en route.
Right. I've been watching. I don't have much. I haven't been reading much, but I picked up a show called Top of the Lake, which is a Jane Campion show from a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's set in, I think, New Zealand.
New Zealand, yeah.
Kind of a weird mystery sort of story. Yeah. And I'm only a few episodes into it, but the second season is coming out later this year. But Top of the Lake on, I'm going to say it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon or Netflix.
We saw it on Netflix.
Netflix, okay.
Scott, what are you recommending this week?
I've got two, if I may. Well, you already stole my first one, which was hockey. But I would advise everyone to go to Club Lago. It's a corner of Superior and Orleans. Guido and Giancarlo Nardini, they're Italian, own the place. I'm not sure they know. That's why. But it's the best place to watch hockey. They're hockey fanatics.
It's a hockey. It's a bar?
It's a bar restaurant, and the welcome mat is always the jersey of the opposing team. So the welcome mat now is a Predators jersey. And number two is, I just fell in love with this. It was recommended by a friend the other day, and they've only got three episodes out right now. It's called Brockmire. It's on IFC. And it is about it's a long story, but effectively, it is Azaria. Is that how you say his last name? Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria.
And he is superb. I didn't know he was that good an actor. He is fantastic. And he plays a sportscaster who goes to a minor league team because he had a total meltdown 10 years before, ends up leaving the country, and he comes back. His last job was calling cockfights in the Philippines. And he comes back.
I love the premise.
But he talks like Vin Scully. He has this great voice and this great and it's terrific. He has this meltdown. He walks in on his wife, who was having an orgy in their home he was unaware of.
Huh.
And
so now he's doing minor league basketball.
So they brought
baseball?
Him back, minor league baseball, and brings him back. And he is terrific. The cast is stupendous. I laughed. It's because it's cable. It's got, I'm a prude, so it gets a little raunchy. There's a lot of nudity that especially Hank Azaria, which is totally unnecessary.
Right.
but if you get past that, it's very funny. It's Brockmeyer, B-R-O-C-K-M-I-R.
Is it like Ballers at all, which I think is terrific?
I don't think I didn't see that.
Well, so. Watch that. They've got a new season coming up, and Ballers is really, really good. Kind of an inside world of a sports agent in the NFL. How about you, Darlene?
Well, I haven't actually seen this show, but my friends have been emailing me about it. It's an HBO program called Insecure. And it, have you heard of it?
No, I don't have that.
Yeah, and so apparently it's this groundbreaking show that is one of the first to deal with black sexuality. And, you know, you don't see a lot of that on TV. And so I hear it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
So
black sexuality,
yet,
I don't even know I don't know where they're going with that.
Well, just kind of, you know, relationships, you know, between African Americans. You know, you don't see a lot of that on TV, and has a lot to do with, you know, homosexuality and just general relationships. So
probably the mass media gives us a stereotype, a very single view of what that is.
This
is more nuanced. Mm-hmm. Huh?
So, like I said, I haven't seen it. I'm gonna watch it because all my friends are talking about it.
And that's the podcast for this week. By the way, we didn't mention at the beginning, but Scott said when we walked in to Darlene, congratulations on the nomination for the Pulitzer.
Pulitzer finalist.
A finalist. Congratulations for that. Darlene, thanks for joining us. Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand, who you hear at noon and at other times on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Thank you, Ben Cortez. He's our engineer. Elif Garris produces The Mincing Rascals, and we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal!